lovely people here for another episode of The Wrap.
I'm going to deem this the card deck episode because we are 52.
52 pickup.
That's right. We're 52.
So are you going to scatter all 52 of our episodes all over the floor and make people pick them up?
No, but you can catch all 50. Well, not really. You can catch all 51.
Do we have a
the first one is missing somewhere, and I'm not sure where.
I cannot wait until one day we find that lost episode.
But I think it was because that was actually when during the pandemic, and we actually did that as part of the service.
We did.
And so it's in like that right video after. Somewhere.
Okay, awesome. We'll look for that someday. Nobody is watching right now. Really cares.
Yeah, it's the lost episode.
That's they tuned in and you tuned in to
maybe that'll be the 100th episode, like the lost episode.
To bring it back again. Yeah, and it's gonna look so bad. It looks so bad, didn't it? It was okay. Anyways, nobody cares about that because they tuned in for episode 52 today.
Yes. Yes.
I'm walking along. Talking about our good buddy Samuel a little bit more. Yeah. I remember last time we opened
time
up Samuel's
old.
Story. He's old.
Yeah.
And that really is the genesis of the entire story when we step into 1 Samuel chapter 8. Is imagine this. You imagine this. We've laughed about this actually for a couple weeks now. Is like, it's probably not a good day when your friends show up to you and they say, number one, you're old and wrinkly. You know, they're being smart. They're thinking ahead. They're like, he's old, he's wrinkly. He's not going to be here forever. And so we've got to make the contingency plan.
You
got to
make the move now, yeah.
Yeah, which is very interesting to me because they probably, you know, well, all of this to say they really didn't need to be making contingency plans because God had it all under control. And that's what really gets things
fouled
up today.
That's the heart of this problem.
Is the heart of the problem we're going to talk about today is there was no need for a contingency plan. But in life, I think most of the time we operate too late. And stuff is that we don't have plans in place until we kind of get to the end. And then we try to scramble around it. And again, that's what gets things fouled up today in the story. So, picture painted. Your friends come to you. The elders of Israel come to Samuel. You're old and wrinkly. And what do they say about his boys?
They're not like you.
Well, yes, that is very mild.
Basically,
very mild way of putting what they say is what I would term. This is just Ryan translation. Your sons are dipsticks. Or
that's
said,
the Ryan International version, the RIV.
Yeah, something. Okay. The Ryan, or the RT, the Ryan translation.
Okay, just
it's not very authoritative whatsoever. Gotcha. Your sons are dipsticks, or as I put it even more harshly on Sunday, your sons are dirtbags.
Yeah.
We're told in 1 Samuel at the very beginning that his sons...
They were kind of dirtbags.
They were. Yeah. Joel and Abijah, they're operating in a part of Israel called Beersheba, which was probably about 25 to 30 miles away from where Samuel... We understand that Samuel, the prophet, had what was kind of a, if you will, a preaching circuit. Right. He had several towns that he went around to constantly preaching and prophesying. So Beersheba was about 25 or 30 miles away from that, which in our modern day, we're like, that's nothing. Like but in that day, that was a pretty wide gulf. Really, I mean, kind of Samuel's sons, Joel and Abijah, were operating kind of on their own. And they weren't doing great things. It says they were taking bribes. They were perverting justice. They were just trying to line their own pockets.
Yeah.
And ironically enough, they become exactly what Eli's two sons. We remember Eli from last time. Eli was a priest when Samuel is a small boy. Eli's boys, Hophni and Phinehas, are very similar.
Those are some names.
They're so great.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to throw that out there into my wife, you know, if we ever have a boy.
Hophni. Phinehas. Phinehas is even better.
Well, I mean, if we have two boys, that's perfect, Hophni and Phinehas.
Great twin names.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Actually, don't do that. And don't use Joel and Abijah because those are Samuel's sons. And they're just, it's ironic how Samuel kind of, through God, condemns Eli and says, your sons are no good. And then it ends up at the end of Samuel's life, his sons are no good.
You think he had a flashback?
Oh, gosh, probably. He's like, oh, geez, yeah. I've been here before. Yeah, so it's not good. Friends come. I put it this way on Sunday. If imagine this, either two different ways. I have kids, and if someone came up to me and like, we need to have a conversation about your kids. like I said on Sunday, that never ends up well. In your situation, no kids, but you've got a wife, and it'd be just the same thing. If somebody came up and said, got a real issue with your wife.
Yeah.
She's kind of a loud mouth, very opinionated. That doesn't feel good.
No.
I mean, even if you know your kids are hellions, It never feels good
even
to have...
if you know how it's going to go, it's never a good feeling.
It's never good to hear that from other people.
Yeah.
Or even if you know your wife is opinionated and loud and brash, it's like, I don't need people to tell me that. I know that, and it doesn't feel good. I'm not saying that at all about Amanda, please. I hope she doesn't watch this.
She's not. She's opinionated, I'll give you that.
But she's not brash.
No.
She's sweet.
No.
She is. I was just using it as a for example.
I was thinking, how do I tread lightly on this one? Because I have to go home with her.
Well, right? I just came right out and helped you out. And we're like, we're not saying that she is that way. But imagine that happens to you. Yeah. It's not a great feeling. This is what happens to Samuel. And then you remember the next thing that happens. It says, because you're old and you're not going to be with us forever and your sons are dirtbags, what do they say?
We need a king.
Now, the wording is very important, I think. It's not that we need a king or that we, would you please give us a king? We would like a king.
We demand.
We demand a king.
Yeah.
Make it happen.
Yeah.
So right off the bat, and this is what I think sets the whole thing up, because we had a big, long discussion on Sunday about, did God even want Israel to have a king? The short answer, yes and no.
Yeah.
Yes, he had made that and made preparations for that, but no, he was supposed to choose the king. He had the right king in mind. They just jumped the gun.
And was fulfilling the duties of their king.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And he says, I'm trying to think, Deuteronomy 17, I think, is where he talks about that. And he goes, when you come into the land and you want a king, because you will want a king, make sure it's the king that I choose.
Yeah.
And the language is very important throughout 1 Samuel 8. And even after you get past that, is God tells Samuel, he says, make them a king, their king for themselves.
Yeah.
Not my king that I want, but make them their king. And really, I mean, just, there's a lot we could talk about in this, but it's disastrous. Mm.
Does not end well.
It does not end well when they get their king. If we had time, we don't really have a lot of time either this episode or even following episodes, we'll kind of touch on Saul. But Saul was not a good dude. Mm-hmm. Saul was self-serving. He was egotistical. He was only in it for himself.
Yeah.
And God does that. With Samuel, he says, here's the deal. Go ahead and give them a king, but I want you to give them a very clear idea of what they're getting themselves into. And what does Samuel end up telling the people of Israel and the elders of Israel? This is what you get when you get a king.
Basically, he's going to take everything from you.
The key word in the latter part of 1 Samuel 8 is he will take, he will take, he will take, he will take. He's a taker.
Yeah.
And that really, go ahead.
That's because this is the wrong king.
Wrong king from the very start. We get a very clear picture. This is the wrong king. And that by nature, humanity is built in that way, I think. And especially when you give a single person absolute authority. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's the quote? They say absolute authority corrupts absolutely or something of that nature. Yeah. You know, somebody's probably gonna be like, hey, dummy, why couldn't you quote that?
I know the quote you're talking about, but I'm not
hopefully
sure.
Hopefully everybody catches that too. But it's just never good when you divest all of that power and authority into one person.
Right. Especially the wrong person.
Yeah, the one who's wrong from the very start. And everything about Saul from the very start is just like, this guy is not getting it.
Yeah.
He's not going to be the one. So here's a very interesting idea. We could probably continue to follow the Saul theme, but that's not really where we're at today. We're about the heart attitude of a people to demand of God certain things. Mm. What does that really communicate to you? Because here's the deal. This isn't just a story about Samuel and his sons and Israel and God. This is our story.
Yeah.
Because don't we do the very same thing in our lives?
Yeah. We demand that God work in the way we want him to work.
Yeah.
And that shows lack of trust.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It is all about us wanting to control the God who we worship.
Right.
And frankly, that's no God at all.
Right.
And really, that all is born out of, to want to control is born out of a distrust, is what you said.
Yeah.
At any level of life.
And a pride.
Yes. At any level of life, whether it's here in 1 Samuel 8 or in our own lives, if we try to control our children, or we try to control our spouse, or we could try to control our friends. All it ever speaks in all of that is, I don't trust you.
Yeah.
And that's a big problem in those relationships, but it's a major and eternal problem when we do that with God.
Yeah.
Now, God, I'll give you
this. Because we may have reason to distrust certain people, right?
Yeah.
We've never been given a reason not
no
to distrust
God. No reason to distrust God whatsoever. And so when we say to God, I'll give you this much of my life, but I'm going to control this last little part, God says, well, you've not really given me your life.
Yeah.
And in what I would call what they're doing here is they're not outright rejecting God, but they are engaging in what I would call in term passive obedience. Mm-hmm. And passive obedience is only ever disobedience.
Right.
If you're not fully giving yourself to God and fully committing yourself to God and fully devoting yourself to God, you're being disobedient.
Right.
That's just the end of it. And that's really, I think, one of the big things we take away from this story is Israel is not godless, but they do lack a complete and total faith. And because of that, they are being disobedient. And like I said, this is why I think we need to understand things like this to understand all of Israel's history.
Yeah.
And to understand our story. Why do things get so out of whack in our lives? And we said this almost from the very beginning, didn't we? Every problem, and I think I feel like it comes up over and again, every problem is born out of what? Do you remember what we said? Trying to be God.
Right.
That starts back in the garden with Adam and Eve.
It's the same problem. It's the
same problem over and over again throughout biblical history and through all world history.
Right.
And so we come to this point with the Israelites and they say, we demand a king. And often I think what we really do in our own day is obviously we don't operate under a monarchy. We don't operate under kings, especially here in Western United States. Who ends up becoming the king?
Us.
We do.
Well, and even them wanting a king is them putting themselves up.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, really is.
That leadership role of, we don't care what you say, you know, we want it our way.
We're going to be king. We're going to control this situation. I'm just looking at this background over here on the computer, and it's a sheer rock face. And I used an illustration. It actually comes from J.D. Greer at Summit Church in North Carolina, but he uses and tells a story about the concept of rappelling.
Mm.
And there are wide differences between rock climbing and rappelling. Yes, they both involve a cliff and a rock face of some sort, but rock climbing is all built on you.
Right.
You are looking to put your hands and your feet in the right spot. You're using your own weight to be able to climb up and get to the top of a mountain or whatever it may be. Rappelling is completely different. You start at the top and you throw yourself out and you lean on the weight of the rope.
You're trusting in that rope.
You're trusting in that rope. And I think oftentimes what we're doing in life when it comes to God and our faith is we're rock climbing.
Yeah.
It looks like we're depending because even in rock climbing, you're tied into a rope.
Right. And that rope is full-time.
But that rope is really only there as a safety precaution and a net. Mm. You're really using your own strength and your own power to climb.
Isn't that how we do that, though?
We do.
In our everyday lives, like, God is our backup plan.
Contingency.
For most of the time. Yeah.
Escape clause.
Well, if I have to, I'll, you know, that's why I think, you know, we see God moving sometimes more in overseas countries that don't have
the other stuff
to trust in.
I have nothing else.
Right. I mean, here we're like, well, if I need to involve God, I will. I've got this handled though, you know?
Yeah. I have all these other things that I can go through. It's almost like God becomes a last resort.
Exactly.
Exactly. I've got all these other things I can work through, all these other contingency plans I can work through.
And think how much he could move in our lives and work in our lives if we just let him.
You're plan A.
Yeah.
And guess what? There is no plan B because it's plan A. And this is the fascinating thing to me. I've heard this before about God is we so distrust God and because of that want to control God, but God, for some unknown reason, has completely trusted us. And I say that because if you think about the church, and especially in the book of Acts, what Jesus is really trying to, I think, communicate to his disciples, and what the disciples or the apostles then communicate to the growing church is, we are plan A. And guess what? There is no contingency plan. Like, that is heavy. Everything here is your responsibility. Now, it doesn't depend on us completely because it's all still eventually about God and him being able to do it. But I've chosen no other method or mode here to be able to get my word out and the mm-hmm. message of the gospel out. The church. Yeah. That's it. People. And very flawed and frail people at that. And so it's amazing to me that we so distrust God, but God so trusts us.
That's good, yeah.
And has clearly communicated that for all of time.
Yeah.
It's just, it's amazing. I mean, I say that on one level, and then you get other lines in the Gospels where Jesus says, I ain't going to trust these stinkers.
Yeah.
Because I know their hearts, and I know what's in a human heart. But really, just the overall mission is kind of what I'm talking about. God has entrusted that to us and said, I don't have any other way. Make this work.
Yeah.
It's just, it's fascinating to me.
But rely on me the whole time. Yeah. It's that mutual trust that makes it work.
Yeah.
Right?
Rely on me. I'm entrusting you, but rely on me. And we like, I need something more like real and tangible and like I put my hands on and again, control. And that's what the problem we really have. I mean, I just speak for myself. We have a really big problem with that of saying, I'm going to let God do this.
Yeah.
And that's it.
I'm going to let God be God.
Let God be God. Yeah. I'll step in where he asked me to, but you leave me
and
where...
And it's easier said than done. Like, I think at a point, all of us deal with that. Every single one of us. You know, that's not anything new, right? Like, we all deal with that struggle of letting go and letting God do what he's going to do. Uh-huh. And man. It's a ride if you let him.
Yeah. I think in a secondary sense to something else that's communicated in this story, which is, I really think, one of the big revelations of this story, is that many times, painfully enough, but truthfully enough, God gives us exactly what we ask for.
You know, as an illustration I use for this kind of thing, I remember when I was, I was probably 7 years old or something like that. That's when the shoes, you know, when you walk, the lights came on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They first came out. I thought, man, I need to get me a pair of those. Begging mom and dad, please, 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 let me. And mom's like, go for it. But you're paying for it yourself. They're not worth it, but go ahead. I got them. Within a week, the lights quit working. That was a learning process for me, like, okay, they gave me what I wanted because I wouldn't shut up, but it taught me maybe I should trust them more. You know what I'm like?
I heard a similar story that was fictional but not so fictional about a teenage girl who had all summer babysat, worked up all of her money. Mom was a single mom, so she didn't have a whole lot of money to really buy back to school clothes and everything to go along with that. And so the daughter said, you know what, I'm going to play my part and I'll babysit and I'll get my money. I'm going to buy my own stuff so it doesn't burden mom. And she got to the end and the summer, and she had all of her money together, and she went, and she was excited about taking mom with her, and they were going to do their back to school shopping, and she came across what she thought was the most beautiful set of heels that she'd ever seen. And she picked it up and looked at the price tag, and it was like, her mom said, you got to really think about this. Like, that's not going to be a good investment. Yeah. Like, you're going to be able to buy one thing versus all this other stuff. And she just couldn't talk her out of it. And she bought these heels, and they didn't really fit too great. They were very uncomfortable. Actually, it ended up causing blisters all over her feet. And she came to the realization that, boy, maybe I should have listened to mom, who was trying to guide me into a better decision and choice. Yeah. And I thought that's a great, great illustration of what God does with us many times of, I'm telling you, you don't want to go there. And you think you need that and you want that. It's going to fulfill you, and it's going to be really great and wonderful. Yeah, but in the end... Not. It's going to be so empty.
Jesus told a story very much like that, right? The prodigal son.
Yeah.
You know.
Go ahead and try it. Go ahead and waste it all and live it up. And then he comes to his senses, it says, and says, oh, my land, how stupid am I?
Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, that is so much of the Bible, and I think so true to life, is sometimes, it sounds weird, but the greatest blessing that God can give us is to go ahead and to answer our bad prayers.
Yeah.
And then we realize, boy, maybe I should have just relied on you in all of this.
Yeah.
And I said on the flip side of that too, is sometimes God's best blessing is that he doesn't answer prayers so that he can protect us.
Yeah.
And so I think that either time, you know, either instances, we look at God and we're like, you know what? that was really painful to go through that and learn that. But thanks for answering that really dumb and bad prayer. So I would learn once again to not rely on anything that I think is going to fulfill me and satisfy me. And then on the other hand, we get so mad at God when we feel like, why aren't you listening to me? Why aren't you answering this prayer? And then we get a few, you know, months or years down the road and we're like, thank you for not answering that prayer. And so again, it all really comes back to what we've been talking a lot about, just trust and faith that God knows what he's doing and will do things in his time. The really ironic thing about this is we'll talk about this later because we'll start to talk about David, is God knew the timing. And if Israel would have just waited probably about another 10 years, David just wasn't seasoned yet. He wasn't ready. He wasn't ready to be God's king.
He was but a boy.
He was but a wee lad, you know? They would have waited 10 years, just 10 short years later, which honestly, let's think about it. 10 years in our life sounds sometimes like an eternity. It's like,
especially when you're praying about something and you really,
you desire it. That's what it is. It's really about desire and about a craving. And Bible talks so much about that when craving and desire, our own fleshly craving and desire take over, it's bad.
Yeah,
it gets a hold of us and it fouls everything up. And it does in this story. We'll continue to see the ramifications of this story play out all the way along the rest of not just the Old Testament, but all of biblical and world history. That when we try to get our own way, and it's not God's way, and it's not in God's time, it just doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And everything that we think in this life will fulfill us and satisfy us and bring us what we really want in life always end up being broken and empty.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a great place to stop for today.
Yeah.
To think about that what are you putting your stock into? Where is your heart led in life? And as you ask that question and answer that question, really be honest with yourself. Is what we're chasing after and desiring in life really what God wants for us?
Yeah.
Oftentimes it's not. And so, like I said, just really a great heart check there on that one to think about what is dominating, what you obsess about, what you work for and pour over in your life. Are they the things of God? Are they the things that advance God's kingdom and do things in his way and in his time and in his will? And so, I think that's where we'll leave it for today.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to
land. I felt like it was like a really like... epic moment right there at the end, like a really big question might drop. And so, guys, we'll leave it at there. And until we see you next time, have a great one.
See you guys.